In our next case, 2023-0179, Disciplinary Counsel versus Chabon. Mr. Chabon, it's your objection.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Chief Justice Kennedy, Justices, Your Honors, this case stems out of a multitude of violations, all of which I have admitted to, accepted responsibility, and been cooperative with disciplinary counsel for the most part, except for the very last stage. Which I also have admitted. My objection is to the panel's conclusion and recommendation. It seems to me, Your Honors, that the recommendation is based on a presumption of recidivism, and it seemed that they were well convinced that recidivism is prevalent here and that there is a one-off for protecting the public from my practice, and as such, they're recommending a 2-year suspension with a 1-year stay. And I was asking the court to overrule this recommendation and impose sanction that doesn't impose any actual suspension. The concern for recidivism, it stems out of I apologize. Let me back out a little bit. This whole process started with my engagement with one Jim Worsing. Mr. Worsing had a practice of engaging people who are in foreclosure and does some auditing of the foreclosure, and with authorization from these people, hires attorneys. And as part of his services, he would assist the attorneys with research, filing, paralegal work.
Was he a lawyer?
He was not, Your Honor.
According to paragraph 18, from November 11, 2017 to July 15th of 19, he paid you $4,200.
Your Honor, I think that is accurate. I'm not sure 100%, but that seems fair.
Okay. So what was he paying you for?
Your Honor, he was paying me for my lawyer service on behalf of the clients. That was my understanding. My relationship with him, I was under impression that it wasn't a violation of any rules, which is why I proceeded with it. However, things started getting out of hand with him. He started making promises we cannot deliver. And
why did he pay you as opposed to the clients?
Pardon me?
Why did he pay you for the representation for your work instead of the clients?
That was my arrangement with him. My understanding is that his relationship with me was he was acting on behalf of the client, because with every client he had a power of attorney to hire attorneys and to engage with the attorneys on behalf of the clients.
And what was his role?
His role was, before hiring the attorney, he would do some type of auditing on the mortgages, try to find some loopholes. I think he worked with some paralegals or other attorneys to do legal research. And considering most cases were in Northeast Ohio, where he resides, and I reside and practice in Toledo, he would do some of the filing where courts don't allow electronic filings. And unfortunately, later on, he was doing filings on my behalf without my knowledge, and things started getting out of hand. My practice was getting busier. I got overwhelmed with the whole process, and then I started missing court appearances. Some of them I knew about, some of them I didn't.
Thank you.
If I may go back, I mean, I'm not trying to diminish my misconduct here. The thing is, there is, I think, 38 violations, but they all stemmed out of this engagement, which I believe the panel understood. However, their recommendation came out of the fact that there was a separate case of a client, Serena Legiza, which I was in a position that I missed court appearances on a couple of times. In the beginning, it was two form pretrials. One of them, I was mistaken, although I had noticed that I was under the impression that the prosecutor's office would call me. That wasn't true, although I had noticed. But the other one, I had the date wrong. I actually called the day before, and clerk's office told me, your hearing is tomorrow, and it just fell through the cracks. I didn't call. The problem came because the case was protracted, and I think it took almost 3 years to resolve, and at some point it was scheduled for a change of plea hearing, and Ms. Legiza was a victim of an attack by her then boyfriend, and she had a medical procedure that day, and she wasn't able to attend. And she was supposed to provide me with a note from the doctor so that I can file a motion for a continuance. She never appeared, and at that time, when it became too late, it was too late for me to even head to court because court was in Findlay, and I was in waiting in my office in Toledo. So it's a 40-minute drive. By the time I arrive there, it would be too late if I file a motion without verification. It would not be well taken, and there's fear that it may seem frivolous. So I wasn't there, and of course, Ms. Legiza wasn't there. She received the bench warrant, and then that happened again 2 weeks later. However, I did make a motion to continue. The motion was denied. Now, one of these situations, there was a bench warrant. The panel and their report and recommendation seemed to hold me responsible for that bench warrant, but I said in my brief and my objection that the bench warrant was due to the client's failure to appear, not mine. She would have had the bench warrant whether I filed a motion, whether I appeared in court, or whether I had done anything, and I did not get any medical documentation from her for another 2 weeks, so making a motion to withdraw the warrant would have been moot, if not frivolous. And
I want to ask you about your representation that you didn't file the motion for a continuance because you thought it might appear frivolous. You're an officer of the court, so anything that you represent is going to be assumed to be truthful. So why didn't you just...
Your Honor...
what was happening?
To be honest, I wasn't sure she was at the doctor or she had...
She told you she was at the doctor, right?
Yes, Your Honor. But I assumed that a verification would have been in order considering she had failed to appear multiple times before. So that was my attitude and position towards it. Now, the panel contends that she was arrested on that warrant. She was not. She was arrested on a felony out of Toledo. And the warrant was served, and she wasn't taken in custody on the case. She was taken in custody on the felony, and she posted bond, and I was able to negotiate that felony to be amended from a third-degree felony to a misdemeanor. I say that to demonstrate that I'm not the type of attorney that just neglects clients. I was found in contempt because of her conduct, I still did my best and represent her in that felony. Further, a point of concern for me is that in the report, the panel states that at some point I testified that my engagement with Mr. Worsing, especially that he would do some of the work, was a way to make extra money, and the panel contended that that means that I would violate the rules whenever it's financially beneficial to me, which couldn't be farther from the truth. I had testified that at that point, though it's not that much of a defense, I was under the impression that this engagement didn't violate the rule, and I testified that I likened it to the engagement of any insurance defense lawyers, because these lawyers work for the insurance companies and represent third-party clients, and which is why I took it. It's not that, absolutely not that I took an engagement that violated the rules because if it's financially beneficial. If I was to do that, I would be ready to retire with a lot of money because there's always opportunities to to violate when the money's there. It's just, I was in a situation that I wasn't fully cognizant of the rule, and the relationship with Mr. Worsing started when I first started practicing, so I was pretty much not that experienced. And I actually terminated my relationship with Mr. Worsing, but unfortunately, it was too late to do that. I just wanted to reiterate that there is no way that I would violate it just simply because it's financially beneficial to me. One more point is that there was, one of the counts was failure to cooperate with disciplinary counsel. This process, I believe, started in June 2021. There was multiple letters that were all responded to. There was a deposition. Then finally, there was a subpoena for all emails with Mr. Worsing. I thought I was under protection of Civil Rule 45D3. Emails between me and Mr. Worsing were in excess of 400 emails during the requested period. And to get these emails to counsel, it would take me to open an email, convert it to a PDF, and then attach it to an email. 400 emails, you know, I would have to neglect all my other clients to get it done in time. For the reasons I just asked the court to overrule the panel's recommendation and...
I have another question.
Yes.
You self-reported, correct?
I was not, no.
You didn't self-report?
I did not.
Okay.
One of the clients filed a complaint.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Meehan, good morning.
Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, actually it's Michelle Hall on behalf of Relator, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel.
Oh, I'm sorry, they highlighted the wrong person as presenting today.
You'll hear from Ms. Meehan in a moment.
Okay.
The court should overrule respondent's objection and impose the board's recommended sanction of a 2-year suspension from the practice of law with 1 year stayed and 18 months of monitored probation. The board's recommendation is supported by respondents, the volume of respondents' admitted misconduct, his hearing testimony, and this court's disciplinary precedent in cases involving attorneys that get involved in foreclosure assistance scams. Respondent has admitted 38 rule violations across 10 counts of misconduct. He has harmed vulnerable clients. He engaged in dishonest conduct in court filings and in communications with opposing counsel. Also, he participated in a foreclosure assistance scam for at least 6 years, which by his testimony contributed to 50% of his practice. First, I would like to address the Legaza representation, which respondent also mentioned in his remarks. 7 of the 8 clients involved in this case were in foreclosure. 1 was not. That was Ms. Legaza. She was charged with driving under suspension in a traffic case. In Ms. Legaza's case, respondent failed to call in for 2 telephone pretrials. He failed to appear for 3 plea hearings and 4 bench warrants issued against his client due to his missed appearances. Respondent caused harm to Ms. Legaza as she was arrested on one of those bench warrants, the 3rd one. Respondent was found in contempt by the trial court and fined for his missed appearances. The Legaza representation reflects an indifference to a client that is consistent with his admitted misconduct in the other 7 client representations in this case. As you heard, respondent uses Ms. Legaza's representation as an excuse and a justification for a state suspension in this case. However, he blames Ms. Legaza, not himself, for the warrant that caused her arrest and claims that the warrant would have been issued regardless of his own conduct. Also, the facts he cited regarding the arrest are facts not in the record. And again, he uses this to attest to his own actions and justify them. Respondent's objections are brief but replete with excuses, and there is no statement of remorse for the harm that he caused Ms. Legaza through the arrest or the harm he caused to the 7 foreclosure clients. Turning to Mr. Worsing, This court in here is again asked to consider an attorney's involvement in a foreclosure assistance scam. That's what Mr. Worsing was running. These scams were prevalent during the subprime mortgage crisis and resulted in several attorney discipline cases from 2006 to 2010. And a companion.
What made them a scam as opposed to someone trying to do something they weren't experienced to do and had no right to do? What actually made them a scam? And do you know whether Mr. Worsing was charged with anything, with any crime or criminal violation?
Mr. Worsing died in 2020, and he died before our investigation began. So he wasn't charged with anything after that point, obviously. But he's no stranger to this court because he has ties to disciplinary cases in 2006 and 2007, the Strankey and Seminelli cases. Okay. That involved one of his former scams called WJW Enterprises, in which attorneys worked with him. This court can just look to count one in this case, which is a fully admitted set of facts by respondent. That outlines how Worsing's scam operated here. He solicited clients using the public record. He found clients that were in foreclosure. He approached them and offered.
So are we punishing him for rule violations, or are we punishing him for the scam you keep talking about?
We're punishing the respondent for the rule violations.
Then maybe you should focus on the rule violations. I mean, stuff that's not part of the charges against him really is fairly irrelevant to what we have to consider.
Well, let me rephrase my question then. Is there evidence that Mr. Chabon knew of Mr. Worsing's mortgage scam, or was he roped into? He said he didn't know that working with Mr. Worsing or taking money as he represented these clients, he didn't know that that was a violation. Is there any evidence that he knew or should have known that Mr. Worsing's operation was a sham?
Mr. Worsing was a non-attorney. And if you look at his obituary in Exhibit 6, he was a plumber by trade. Given his involvement with the disciplinary cases in 2006 and 2007, our position is that respondent should have been on notice that an attorney's involvement in a situation, a scam like this, would be grounds for discipline.
Okay, thank you.
Justice DeWine, returning to your question about
I would just hope you would focus on the charges against him.
The charges against him include diligence, several aspects of a failure to communicate, and that is all tied back to the scam in this case.
So should we punish him more for these other things that aren't part of the charges that you seem to be focusing your presentation on, or should we punish him for the disciplinary violations?
Punish respondent for the disciplinary violations, but our position is that the scam is tied into the disciplinary violations.
But that's not part of the evidence, right? That's not the charges. Those aren't the proof.
Well, the proof in the case is respondent's admission that he
violated certain rules. That's what this case is about. That's what he's been charged with.
That's correct. He violated rules involving diligence and communication in the clients that he received referrals from Mr. Worsing on. So respondent would receive a referral from Mr. Worsing, but Mr. Worsing gave him all of the pleadings and motions that he filed in these cases. He did not communicate with any of these clients. He relied on Mr. Worsing to do that. And these are all admissions contained in the set of stipulations before you.
Counsel, why isn't this kind of like disciplinary counsel versus Maley from 08? I mean, the mitigation aggravation factors seem very similar. The secretary in that case sure sounds like Mr. Worsing. Why isn't that what we should be looking at?
In the Maley case cited in the board report, Maley received a 18-month suspension with 6 months stayed. That situation was an employee of his law office who was engaging in the unauthorized practice of law, he says without his knowledge. So it was a failure to supervise and prevent the unauthorized practice of law.
So why are you advocating for the same sanction? Because yours is different than what the board recommended. The board's recommending a year suspended, and you're recommending 18 months suspended.
Correct, Justice Bruner. The board recommended a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed. At the close of hearing and in our post-hearing brief, we recommended an 18-month suspension with, or I'm sorry, a two-year suspension with 18-month stay.
Yeah, I mixed up stay and suspension. That's what I meant.
The situation is that we presented our sanction recommendation before we had the benefit of the hearing transcript. The board, upon receiving the hearing transcript and reviewing respondents' testimony in this case, determined that an increased sanction from what we later recommended was appropriate. We support the board's recommendation upon reflection of the hearing testimony. Some of the testimony that concerned...
So you didn't have the transcript for your post-hearing brief then?
That's correct. Those briefs were submitted before the hearing transcript was prepared, and we agreed to that upon the board's recommendation.
Thank you.
Going to the hearing testimony that concerned the board, that's highlighted in paragraphs 266 to 275 of the board report. Some of the testimony that concerned the board was that his problems in the foreclosure cases will not reoccur because Worsing is dead. Respondent said his part in Worsing's scheme was extra money for Worsing doing most of the work and that it was an easy way to make money. Respondent also admitted to having difficulty managing his practice and being overwhelmed. Absent from that testimony, though, was any mention of concern for respondents' clients or the fact that four of them lost their homes in foreclosure, and one of them was arrested due to a missed court appearance. We believe that respondents' hearing testimony validates the board's concern that he's at risk for recidivism and supports a significant sanction in this case. I'd like to highlight the case precedent in my remaining time. The board properly relied on Geauga County Bar Association versus Patterson, a 2009 case. Patterson received an 18-month suspension from the practice of law with 6 months stayed. This is the most severe sanction this court has imposed in a case involving a foreclosure assistance scam and an attorney's involvement, but respondents' misconduct here pales in comparison to the misconduct described in Patterson. Patterson was a three-count complaint. The first count detailed his general involvement in the foreclosure assistance company, similar to the fee-sharing count in count one in this case. Count two described Patterson's representation of a single foreclosure client and, similar to this case, involved a failure to meet with the client or communicate with them. That client lost his home. In this case, there were seven foreclosure clients that respondent admitted misconduct in, and four of those clients lost their homes. The three remaining clients had to secure new counsel in their foreclosure representations. In Patterson, the third count involved mishandling an estate matter, which is akin to the Legaza representation, an unrelated matter to foreclosure that respondent committed misconduct during. In Patterson, the court, in fashioning its sanction, relied on Patterson's two previous attorney discipline cases. He had public reprimands in 1980 and 2006. And they used the prior discipline in fashioning a harsher sanction than disciplinary counsel versus Willard, which was decided the same year as Patterson. Here, respondent has no prior discipline and received credit for that in the board's report. However, it's the only mitigating factor in this case. At respondent's request, the panel kept the record open for him to submit evidence of good character and reputation, and he failed to do so, consistent with his lack of diligence in his client representations. The board also found three aggravating factors: a pattern of misconduct, multiple offenses, and the vulnerability of and resulting harm to the victims of misconduct. Here, our position is that respondent's misconduct is significantly more egregious than the attorneys in Patterson, and the sanction here should follow suit. Also, unlike in this case, there was no dishonesty involved in Patterson, indicating that the sanction in respondent's case must go beyond the sanction in Patterson. As you heard, respondent is arguing for a fully stayed suspension. Interestingly, he relies on the two cases involving Worsing as justification for a stayed suspension, although in those cases the court imposed actual suspensions. Those are, again, the Stranke case from 2006, in which the attorney was involved with Worsing for just 3 months. And then the Simonelli case from 2007. That attorney received a one-year suspension with 6 months stay, for his 6 months of work with Worsing.
Is there any case where we should consider, in this scenario, in this action occurring with people such as Worsing, is there any time when we should ever consider an attorney a victim of another individual when they're acting together as they did here? I mean, I guess what I'm getting to is Mr. Chabon said he was young and vulnerable and, you know, in a sense he was taken advantage of, but he has the training of an attorney and Mr. Worsing didn't. Is there any time when we would consider an attorney a victim in that scenario?
Justice Spooner, that could be a factor in determining the sanction that this court would impose against respondent. However, because Stranke and Simonelli had already been decided, both of those cases involved Worsing. Respondent should have been on notice that Worsing's business model was a foreclosure scam. Respondent in the seven client representations in this case simply didn't do any work. He filed notices of appearance, and everything that he filed was drafted and researched by Worsing. Respondent, by his own testimony, just rubber-stamped everything that Worsing filed. He didn't verify the contents of these filings. He didn't counsel the clients or evaluate their foreclosure cases. He simply was a straw man here and who, again, rubber-stamped everything that Worsing gave him to file.
Did Worsing ever sign his name? Signed the respondent's name to documents?
Respondent did provide his e-filing credentials to Worsing, and respondent's position is that in count three, Worsing was filing those documents without his knowledge. Worsing also had respondent's electronic signature, so Worsing was affixing, with respondent's knowledge, his signature and attorney registration number to the filings in these foreclosure cases. My time is about coming to an end. In conclusion, we urge this court to adopt the board's recommended sanction of a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed, including 18 months of monitored probation. The board's recommendation is fully supported by the volume of respondents' admitted misconduct, coupled with his hearing testimony and this court's precedent in the disciplinary cases involving attorneys involved with foreclosure assistance scams. Thank you.
So I'm unclear, because it was not designated in the oral argument sheet. Are you sharing time or not?
We are not sharing time, Your Honor.
Okay.
I filed a notice of appearance in the case and went during check-in informed the staff that I would be arguing the case.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chabon, you have 3 minutes and 42 seconds remaining. Would you like to respond?
Your Honor, I waive. I waive, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.